And tonight, as Pastor Mike comes, just give him a big round of applause as he's about to wow us tonight.
Wow. I'm going to wow you, right? Well, how's everyone doing? Good. Glad this side of the room's doing great. And how's this side of the room doing? Fabulous. And we have this little joke going around. My friend Dave Mendetto broke his ankle. Was it last week, Dave? Month ago. Sorry, a little late. Two fries short of a Happy Meal. But anyway, and then Dave Ayers right next to him broke his ankle and just got out of the cast, and then he's in. And so the joke is that hopefully I will not be in a cast, and that's definitely not something I want to do. But anyway, hey, by the way, if you thought tonight was the second part of the stem cell research panel, we just invite you to stay because it's not. And I wanted to announce that before the meet and greet time or after the meet and greet time because, you know, I didn't want everyone to leave. So if you're in here now, the rule is you can't leave. No, I'm just teasing. But we're going to have a great time tonight. I'm actually going to share on something that has been stirring in my heart for probably about 2 months now. To be honest, I'm a little nervous, and you guys will probably won't even understand why. But I'm just going to talk about something that's kind of really close to my heart that God's really just kind of been working in me. But before we get into that, I did want to tell you, as Paul mentioned, that we are, if you did not catch all of the stem cell research panel, it is available through our website, centralassembly.org, and you go to the download section, and you can navigate through there to download it through iTunes, which is a free service. It doesn't cost you anything, and you can actually subscribe to the podcast there. Someone asked me, what is a podcast? A podcast is this service that's available through iTunes, and you don't have to necessarily have an iPod to get it. You can listen to it on your computer and download iTunes, and you just click the little subscribe button, and you literally will be updated every single week with the message that Pastor Jim does on Sunday morning or Sunday evening and this Wednesday night service. So it'd be great, and of course, if you don't want it, you can delete whatever message you like, and, you know, yeah, so it's a lot of fun. And if you have an iPod, you can put it on your iPod, and I try to listen to a message. I try to listen to a sermon a day from people all over the country, and I just love it. It's absolutely fabulous. So that's a great service. And then also, we are doing something very exciting. Paul, can you give me one of those tickets? And this is something that I have actually reserved about 200 tickets for us out of about 600 or so, just for New Community. I have them in my possession. And this is a banquet ticket for a banquet that's coming up on September 15th. It starts at 6:30. It's going to be right here where we meet every single week. And it's a banquet called Give Forward. And we're basically going to look to our past and then look to our future of what is ahead for Central Assembly. And we are, I don't know how else to say this, but we are desperate for you in this room to be there. We are so desperate that Pastor Jim and Sandy have been so gracious to subsidize part of the cost of this meal. That's going to be a great meal, but it's only going to be $5 for you to be there. And that's just, I don't make, you know, if you've been here for a while through the summer, I don't make these kind of announcements every week. So I'm really stressing to you, this is highly important to the life of our church, and you're just going to love it. We're going to be, we're kind of, you know, you saw a guy roaming around with a camera a while ago, and it's a great friend of ours, Patrick, and he's putting together a great video for us. It's just going to be a fun night, great meal, and a great time to hear about the vision of the church and what's ahead for us in the future. So we'd love for you to be there, and that's the Give Forward Banquet. And those tickets are going to be available right after service, and Paul is going to be selling them at one of the round tables right out there. So, and we'll also be selling them every Wednesday until September 15th, which gives us a couple more Wednesdays before it actually comes along. So you can bring your money now, or you can come next week and do that. There's also kids services available. We'll be feeding your kids for free, and, you know, child care is provided if you need any of that. So it's going to be great. You're not going to want to miss it. Please pick up your ticket when you can. Well, tonight I wanted to talk about something that I'm kind of entitling contrast. Contrast. And how many of you grew up? I don't know. I'm not that old, but Anyway. Yeah, what's the point? There we go. I'm not that old, but I grew up, I remember we had this television growing up that had all the little knobs, and like, I don't even know how those knobs lit up, but like you'd pull the little power button and you had this like rotary dial and it was like chicking, 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 you know, and it kind of did this thing. And then right below that, and you remember when televisions were more like furniture, you know, they're pieces of furniture. I mean, huge wood. I mean, it's like a 27-inch screen in like a 60-inch giant box. And now, you know, they have flat screens that just fit right over the mantle, which are great. But, you know, they used to be like works of art, you know, pieces of furniture. And back when those days, they had these little knobs, which were the best knobs in the whole world. Right below the little rotary dial, you had like the tent, you know, where you could change, you know, you're watching Superman or, well, you know, I've watched Superman or, you know, and you could turn his face yellow or green or something. That was a whole lot of fun to watch TV like that for a little bit. Or then you turn it all the way to the other side and he's like, you know, he can be like Spanish Superman. You know, he's got kind of like a tan to him. And that's, you know, that's kind of cool. And or you slip on down. My favorite button was the contrast knob, the contrast knob. You take this contrast knob and you dial it all the way over to the right and the screen will literally go black. I mean, it's just, you can barely see anything on the screen. It's all saturated with these black colors. You turn it all the way to the left and it almost has this this white to it. You know, you can barely make out anything. It's just all white. And then you kind of turn it in the middle and they always put like these little notches right in the middle. And you kind of find that little notch. And once you find the notch, that's supposed to be like where it is. That's where you need to keep it. If you want it a little bit richer or whatever, you could dial it over just a little bit. But the point in that whole thing is that I was thinking about this several months ago about my life as a contrast. And this is going to sound a little strange, but as a contrast knob, and how sometimes, you know, I came across that verse in just one of my morning devotions about how we're supposed to be salt and light. And as I was reading that, I don't know if you ever had these problems, but sometimes in my devotions, I just like rabbit trail, man. I'm like salt and light. You know, this is all you AGTS and Bible college students are going to be like, shame on you. But like, I wasn't reading the context. I just thought salt and light. I'm like, light. Wow, that's cool. You know, like contrast, you get all light. And so anyway, I started thinking about this concept of how my life is very pleasing to the human eye. It's almost like my life is in this middle notch and that no one can really tell, no matter where I go or where if I'm really a Christian or not, other than what I truly believe down deep in my heart, which is great. And so I started developing that and I started thinking about this. And as I began to think about this, some things began to kind of come to my mind. And what I wanted to do tonight is kind of look through the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy is a fabulous book, and we're going to find some observations in here that I just want to, just three things, and then I'm going to show you a pretty powerful video, I believe, that hopefully you'll walk out of here really challenged to be different than possibly when you came in. The book of Deuteronomy is essentially, about three sermons and a song, however you want to look at it, from the great leader Moses, and he's speaking to the children of Israel. And Deuteronomy is right before the time that they were going to cross over into the promised land. They get right to the edge, and it's like Moses is taking them. He's leading them out of the Exodus, you know, and they've been in bondage of slavery. They're out of that. They're going. They've been in the wilderness, and now they've kind of gone through these ups and these downs just like we do. And so the children of Israel approach this brink of entering into the promised land, and God's like, hold on, you know. And so the book of Deuteronomy is Moses essentially giving his last words to the children of Israel right before he passes the reins of leadership onto Joshua, and then Joshua takes them on into the promised land. And the book of Deuteronomy is, needless to say, very potent when it comes to someone thinking about what would your last words be to a group of people or to a person if you really only had a limited time to live and you could say one thing to them. And so the book of Deuteronomy is interesting because as you kind of go through it in just a bird's eye view, and that's kind of what we're going to do tonight, the first three chapters, three or four chapters, you know, about halfway through the fourth chapter, Moses is basically rehearsing all that God has done for them in the past. All the slavery that he brought them out of and all the bondage that he brought them out of. And it kind of, as he goes through here, these children... this generation that he's actually speaking to was not the generation that came out of the Exodus. This was essentially the next generation. This was this generation that he's speaking to is their children. Okay, it's the next generation. And so he's trying to get these children to remember where they have come from. And so chapters 1 through 4 essentially gives you that. And I started thinking about it. It's kind of the same. When you start thinking about our lives, I kind of call this a different sermon, but I'll try to stick to it and just share an illustration with you. But several years ago, actually when Daisy and I lived here in Springfield, I got the worst case of food poison I've ever had in my life. This is before we had kids. And I slept on the floor of the bathroom the entire night and basically puked my guts out in this toilet. And as I was laying there, I remember, some of you know my testimony, some of you don't, but I remember this so vividly. As I'm laying there and sitting over that toilet, just sleeping there basically, just messed up because of this food poison, I went back to a day in my life when I wasn't really serving God, and I was hugging the toilet, so to speak, for other reasons, for being... too inebriated or whatever. And I can remember nights where I would sit over the toilet and do the very same thing. And as I was doing that night with Daisy, she was in there, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I'm okay, whatever." And I think it's a bad Chinese. I got bad Chinese the other day too from around here. Man, I don't know what it is with these Chinese places. Anyway, I won't tell you the names for fear that someone works there. But anyway, got to watch out for that MSG stuff, I guess. But anyway, it reminded me of something, and I think it's the same thing that Moses is trying to do with this generation. You know what? We have to remember where we come from. We have to remember where we come from. You see, I realize this, that Satan never really reminds you why you should trust God. Satan never reminds you why you should trust God. You see, as I was laying there over that toilet, I remember this. I remember thinking to myself, God, you have brought me from so much. You have done so much in my life. And a lot of people may tell you that you need to forget your past and all of this stuff. And I would agree that there are times when you do not need to relive your past in certain areas. But you know what? The past in my life is a remembrance to me of where I have come from in my life with God. And now, I've come from one life, but you know what? You may have grown up in the church, and you may have seen some powerful things, and I think that's the best testimony that you can have. And you may realize that, you know what? I have seen powerful healings. I have seen some things in the church. And can I just tell you this? Don't forget about those things. Do not forget about those things. Because when you remember your past, it helps you guide and thrust you into the future of what God would have for you. And so this is kind of an interesting verse. I just wanted to highlight it. It's chapter 5 and verse 15. I'm reading out of the English Standard Version. And Deuteronomy chapter 5 verse 15 says this: "You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt." Now if you know anything about the scriptures, anything about the Bible, the central focus, I truly believe, at least in my opinion, I believe the central single event that takes place, at least in the first five books of the Bible, and I would argue even for the rest of the Old Testament, that people constantly go back to, whether it's the prophets or whatever, is the Exodus. It is the people coming out of the bondage of slavery into a life of freedom. Next week we're going to be talking about a message that I'm entitling The New Exodus. And this Exodus, it's like, it's almost the point of reference that everyone else says, but you remember when we were a slave, or do you remember when we were this? And it's like the people during that time would constantly go back to the time when they were in bondage. And so he goes to the worst possible event. Moses is telling these children, this next generation, the worst thing that has ever happened in their history of a race. And he says this: you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Then in chapter 5, basically through about chapter 11 on even to chapter 26, you basically have a lot of these kind of detailed things about how to worship. And he rehearses the Ten Commandments to them, as it was their main way of expressing their love to God, was through the Ten Commandments. And so he kind of rehearses that, you know, around chapters 4 to about 11. And then on from 11 to 26, he gives like these detailed things about worship. And I know you guys are all thrilled to hear about those things. But, you know, it's what's incredible is that he keeps pointing back to this Exodus. And then he goes on and he begins to describe these things that is their way of basically expressing that they love God. And what I kind of, when I read through this, a bird's eye view, I began to think about something. Why did Moses, you see, Moses is the same guy that came down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments and he gave it to the children of Israel. So why does he come along in the book of Deuteronomy? By the way, the book of Deuteronomy is a part of the Torah or the law or instruction. And basically, you know, even as a young boy or a young girl growing up in a Jewish culture, even in the New Testament, you were basically made. It was your schooling to memorize those first five books of the Bible. It was essentially the educational system of that day. And so it's very interesting because as you look through these verses, you come across great things like, let me just read you a verse in chapter 6 before we move on from here. Listen to this. Deuteronomy chapter 6 verse 4 says this. Tell me, and just think to yourself if you ever heard this before. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words I command you today shall be on your heart. Kind of reminds us of something that Jesus said in Matthew chapter 20, actually in all the Gospels. But it's pretty amazing because, you see, when Jesus would say this, when Jesus quoted this scripture back in Deuteronomy in Matthew 22, you see what they're thinking about? They didn't have the New Testament in that day. As soon as he says that, anyone around them would say, oh, he's quoting Deuteronomy. They're thinking about something that did happen. And you see, something that did happen was not just a saying that they grew up in their educational system, but it was all about what? It kind of went back to the central thing of God bringing them out of bondage and of slavery. And so why does he rehearse these things? I believe it's the same reason why we would need to set up what I call moral boundaries even in our life today. Moral boundaries. You know what? It's not just... when we think about moral boundaries, you know, in Deuteronomy, Moses tells the children to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and your might. And then Jesus comes along a little bit later and he says, this is essentially the greatest commandment, to love God and to love your neighbor. And essentially all the prophets and all the law hang on these two commandments. And what's amazing to me is as I kind of... read through this and talk about moral boundaries. You see, we have Christianity is essentially a moral religion, so to speak, or we have these morals. And a lot of times when I hear people say the word morals, immediately the first thing that comes to my mind, I don't know if this is about you, but I think about all the things that we can't do. It's like morals, people say, oh, you know, you set up moral boundaries. So let me tell you all the things that you cannot do. You know, you can't do this because you're a Christian. You can't do that because you're a Christian. And I can just tell you this, that I think God is a little bit deeper than just giving us a list of 10 or so things that we cannot do. In fact, Jesus in the New Testament took it a little bit further. And I was reading about this teaching of a rabbi this past week, and it was absolutely fascinating. And I forget the concept that he called it, but you know, one of the commandments is you shall not commit adultery, right? And so Jesus picks up on this in the Sermon on the Mount, and he's like, you've heard it said not to commit adultery, but I tell you, even if you look on a woman with lust, you've already committed adultery. So it's like we have these grouping of like 10 things that a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to be a Christian, and I'm not going to serve God because of all these lists that I can't do. And then Jesus comes along and he says, look, I don't even care what you've heard about. You've heard this. You have been taught this because that was their educational system. But I'm telling you, even if you look at a woman with lust, you've already committed adultery in your heart. And so it's almost like there's this circle of, this rabbi was saying, there's like this circle, which is the Ten Commandments. And then Jesus like extends the boundaries. And so a lot of people think that since we are now under grace, that none of really the Old Testament applies to us. This is not really central to Jesus' teachings at all. In fact, he would kind of argue that because we are now under grace, these are just like, you know, Jesus extends the boundaries. These are things that the laws, of course, we don't need to, Galatians and all these things talks about not being under the law anymore, and we know those things. But the interesting thing is that we don't do away with these things. And it's interesting to me that sometimes I have felt and had a sense for people that because we have, quote, grace, that we can abuse that sometimes, just to be flat out honest with you. And it's riveting to me that Paul, who wrote almost two-thirds of the New Testament, would say things in Corinthians and Galatians that, you know, since you are under grace, shall you keep on sinning? And he actually says, by no means. It's sometimes I think that we've gotten a few things a little twisted. You see, God's commands are liberating. I don't believe the moral checklist is things that we should not do. In fact, John 10:10 says that Jesus has come to give us life and life to the fullest. It's almost like Jesus is radically changing what we think today. He's like, no, you're not getting it. I want to give you so much life, I'm trying to protect you by these things. You see, we don't have to do the commandments to earn our salvation. We're saved by grace through faith. But yet Jesus is saying, look, live and walk in the Spirit of God that is deposited in you, and all those other things are going to be taken care of. But yet I think that we skip this whole thing of being obedient and living righteous and holy lives. About two summers ago, I went to New York City and I took a group of students from Toledo, Ohio, and we went to an AIDS hospital there. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. One of the things that I saw that changed my life is we're walking down the halls of one of these, of the worst part in that hospital where these guys only have weeks to live. And I'm walking down this hall and I saw for the first time in my life a person who had no arms and no legs, and bed sores all over themselves, and they were sitting out in the hallway because evidently it was this person's break time where they wheeled them out of their room and into the hallway. And, I told even all my students to do this, not to stop and stare, but I couldn't help. But when I passed, because this guy was laying in the middle of this hallway screaming at the top of his lungs, and I couldn't help but to think, how often does he just sit there and scream? And later on that evening, I had like this thought come to my mind that sometimes we're like that as the church. You see, doing what we did last week, talking about stem cell research, is something that I obviously don't know a lot about, but there's something deep down in my soul that wants to do something in this culture. Why? Because I think nowadays, that the church needs to be careful that we don't turn into just a mouth with no arms and no legs. And we just sit there and we scream and we squawk at everything that's wrong. And we grumble and we find ourselves just like the children of Israel in the book of Deuteronomy. Not wanting to listen. Needing to be reminded about the things that we've come from. Needing to be reminded about the morality and the freedom that God has given us through his laws and through his grace. I mean, it's freedom. It's kind of crazy to think about, but it's freedom. And God doesn't give us morality and freedom to just sit around and just gripe about everything that's going wrong in the world. No, he gave us that freedom so that we would do something about it, so that we'd live. I mean, when's the last time you heard about, hey, just be a better human being, be a better neighbor? I mean, when's the last time you you cut your neighbor's grass or something. Maybe they don't have a weed eater. And you cut their grass for them. I mean, I'm not trying to put any legalistic expectations, but I mean, I think at some point God has got to change us and transform us. We have to allow Him to make us better people, not just a mouthpiece. Not just getting in arguments. I mean, I told someone the other day, they said, man, I really feel like God just challenged me to do this. What do you think I should do, Pastor Mike? I really want to go into the political thing and start doing stuff. What do you think I ought to do? And I said, well, you're probably asking the wrong person. I think the first thing you ought to do is not say anything and just try living it for 3 months. You know, I realize that sometimes we become like this person with no arms and no legs. We just don't do anything. But folks, we can't just yell and scream because of all the things that are going on. We have to be called to action. We have to get up and do something about it. And the last thing in Moses chapter 32. It's interesting because Moses writes a song. Who'd have ever thought a great leader was a musician or a poet or a songwriter? Moses chapter 32, he writes a song for his people to remember him, to remember God's laws and God's deliverance. You've probably seen on the news here recently that, it actually kind of makes me emotional, but Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, was stabbed in the heart by a stingray, the barb of a stingray, and the neurotoxins from that evidently went into his heart, killed him nearly instantly, and I thought to myself, man, this guy basically travels around and, gets crazy with animals and holds his baby near crocodiles and everything else. I'm like, dude, you are nuts. And but he made an impact. He made an impact. I mean, I didn't tell you he made an impact. Daisy and I are sitting in our kitchen crying because Steve Irwin died. We're like, I can't believe it. It's so tragic. And it is. It is very tragic. Two babies and too close to our kids' age. And I'm like, man, alive. But he was very passionate about what he did, wasn't he? And can I just tell you, and Moses, in my opinion, I'm reading Deuteronomy through the eyes of a leader. And as I'm reading this book, I can't help but to think, why was Moses so driven? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever analyzed the call of God on your life and why? Why are you called? Why do you feel passionate about that? And I think, again, it goes back to when they were in slavery and Moses seeing his friends and an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and then the next day, two Hebrews fighting, and it's almost like he gets to the point where he's like, I can't stand this. I hate this. And all of a sudden he opens himself up to be used by God in such a powerful way. And I believe this, I truly, truly believe this, that if each of us would open ourselves up, and I'm not going to tailor make this to say everyone has to be in full-time ministry, because I think that would do you a disservice. But I think every single one of us has a God dream, a God vision that He wants to implant in you. And He wants you to make a difference just like that. You know, Moses led the children of Israel out of bondage and to the brink of into the promised land, and passed on his legacy to someone else, never even saw the fruition of that. But maybe your call is that you're the greatest neighbor in the world, and that you lead one person at a time to Christ. And can I just tell you, this proverb says, he who wins souls is wise. It doesn't matter what you do. I know there are some x-ray technicians here in this room that share their lives and share their faith, and I cannot tell you, part of me like, man, I need to become an x-ray tech so I can just share my faith like that. I mean, I can only get Pastor Jim saved so many times. I mean, I'm like, come on, man, you got to, get saved again. But, you can only do that so many times in our workplace. But, reaching people for Christ, that's awesome, man. Changing people's destiny is fabulous. But tonight, the thing that God's been dealing with me tonight, and even during worship, I was just kind of brought back to this. Many times in our lives, although we remember the past, we have these moral boundaries and challenge you guys to make a difference. I think we allow the temptations of this world to pollute our righteous and holy lives. One of the themes throughout the book of Deuteronomy is obedience and righteousness. And you see, obedience and righteousness is not that when we give our hearts to Christ that He makes us righteous. Obviously, that is an aspect of that. But it's also that when we are made righteous, we are called to action. And that's the obedience side of it. We are called to action. And that action in the form of obedience is absolutely amazing. We didn't get a chance to share it tonight, but in Deuteronomy 28, basically the blessings and cursings part of Deuteronomy essentially says this: if you will fully obey the Lord your God and all of His commands, all of these blessings will come upon you and accompany you if you obey them. And he goes on to list several verses about things that God will do for you, that your baskets will be overflowing, that your enemies will come at you from one direction and flee from you in seven, and all these like powerful word things. And all of a sudden I realized, because right after that, in the next chapter, it says, but if you do not obey, then all these curses will come upon you. And it's almost verbatim the exact opposite of everything that your blessing would be. So it's like we're presented with this choice of obedience or not obedience. And by no means, I need to preface this video that we're going to see tonight, because I realize that it's probably going to push some of your buttons. And it kind of pushes the edge a little bit, but I thought this was a safe place to do it. You can save your hate mail for someone else. So, but I realize that watching television throughout the week and listening to certain kinds of music that I mean, I've you know, seen and done myself, I think to myself, there's a lot of noise and there are a lot of things in this world that want to pollute my righteous and Spirit-led life. And I don't know how else to say this but to be a little old-fashioned in saying that may we never forget that God calls us to live holy and pure lives. This past week has been an amazing revelation to me in my own personal life that God wants me to live a holy and pure life. And I know that I'm not going to be perfect in any of those things. I know I'm not going to be sinless, and that's, thank God for His grace. But I don't abuse His grace. And so we came up with this concept of a video that a friend of mine helped me out to make. And it starts off with a worship song and some pictures of Christ in the crucifixion. And this worship song, if you listen carefully, never stops playing. But over top of this, I put some very, I would say, mainstream things that we have probably all seen in our lives and have heard from time to time. And I watched it earlier on before everyone got here, and it literally makes me cringe to watch it here. And but then the song keeps going on. In the very end, I'm going to show a verse, and I just pray that this would be a little bit of a challenge to you, because it helps me realize that on the contrast knob of my life, I cannot be dialed into the center. I'm very pleasing to the human eye, but you know what? My actions and the words that I speak, the meditations of my heart, you can't ride the fence, because riding the fence gets very uncomfortable after a while. God has called us to be light in a dark world. And we can't be both and. If you know me, I'm not about legalistic expectations or saying you have to do X, Y, and Z to accomplish the grace of God in your life. But yet there's a flip side of that coin. That we would strive to live the purest and the holiest life through the Spirit of God. And say, God, I am desperate to live for You, holy and pure. I want to challenge you to open up your heart as you watch this video that we've made. It's called Contrast.